And now it's time for the Wild Side News with your host, Sydney Wildsmith.
Whoa, it's back to school time. Went to my local office supply store and had to climb over boxes and boxes of pens, paper, binders, clips, locker organizers, calculators, and soccer moms with kids. Aren't we lucky? But what if every kid in the world could buy the same as us? Would it work? And why shouldn't they have all the great stuff we do? Today, we talk with Paul Ehrlich about the future of planet Earth here on the Wild Side News.
Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
Is this really the last week of summer vacation? Yep, it's always a time of change. People are gearing up to get back to a more serious focus on work and school, and therefore family and community. And some are likely already feeling the subtle changes in the season. The crickets are singing more slowly at night as they feel the minutiae of change in nighttime temperatures. Birds are putting on fat for the long flight to better climes. As their brains perceive the shortening day length, which triggers hormones to change their bodies into long-distance flyers. In the U.S., we struggle through another worthless week of political spitting contests. As the planet spins through the days, each turning moment seeing forests being stolen, oceans thinning, crops blistering by drought, massive storms blasting through whole communities. One wonders if we have time to ask the important questions. Like, why don't we have time to think about important questions? Well, today we are going to make the time to get serious enough to get intelligent and shake hands with the future. The Wild Side News is honored to bring to you a planetary medicine man. You know, the village medicine man in tribal communities is the mysterious one, the knowing man, who understands the mysteries and can work the magic to give wisdom and to heal. Not necessarily loved, for who can love the oracle, particularly when his words portend harder times? Today, the oracle, the medicine man of our time, Dr. Paul Ehrlich, who will forever alter the vision of our better world with the publication of The Population Bomb. Praised and pilloried, he returns now with his new book about our history, our predicament, and the future during our second segment today. And he stays with us and will take your calls during our third segment, so write this number down, 888-327-0061. I'll give that again, 888-327-0061, and you can call during our third segment. And following the news, we head to our nation's capital to talk with J.J. James, who will tell us about the George Washington Memorial Parkway, our park of the week. So, let's get started. And now, the news. With oil pegged at $50 a barrel, there's a lot of questions being raised, such as, so, when are prices at the gasoline pump going to explode due to the increased prices of a barrel of oil? And, if they do explode, what's this going to do to the American economy? The White House has acknowledged that high energy prices have become a drag on the U.S. economy, but not a threat to the growing economy, and that any change in the economic forecasts are due to rising energy prices, not due to poor planning. Presidential candidate John Kerry has called on the Bush administration to temporarily stop putting crude supplies into the strategic oil stockpile to help lower gasoline prices. But Scott McClellan said on Friday that the administration would act in order to protect consumers and our economy in the event of a national emergency or a severe disruption in supply, but is opposed to tapping into the reserves. The U.S. presidential election is scheduled for Tuesday, November 2nd. The resource wars continue to make the news following California's energy crisis, which walloped the business and private sectors. Now reports are that the two-year drought could have a similar economic consequence as well. Lawmakers are warning that water shortages are predicted to have significant social and economic impact in California and the world. Efforts to inspire water conservation and electric conservation are being considered as the California legislature seeks legislation mandating the construction of 1 million solar homes. Conservation of both water and electricity is the most efficient means of controlling prices for these resources. Failure to meet the demands in time would lead to water cutoffs, scarcity, contamination, and rising costs. So if you're thinking of moving to the Golden State, well, maybe think again. How about we take a break and go fishing? Terrific. Just don't eat the fish. Americans this week were cautioned about eating fish from more than one-third of U.S. lakes and nearly one-fourth of its rivers due to pollution from mercury and other chemicals, according to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. The nationwide about 102,000 lakes and about 846,000 river miles are on the restricted list. This figure is up 9% from the 2003 levels. The pollutants are mainly due to coal-fired utilities. Nursing mothers and young children should be particularly cautious of eating contaminated fish, as mercury can be very detrimental to the developing nervous systems of infants. And a program note, joining us in segment two will be Dr. Paul Ehrlich, who will provide his vision of how we might begin to seriously interpret some of these continuous warnings. I may need to need some help with this story. It's absolutely clear that the threats of global warming are becoming discussed and debated around the globe. It's a two steps forward, one step back kind of exchange. Summits are being held and planned. Global strategies for dealing with the threats of melting ice caps, possible coastal flooding, drought, famine, starvation. Well, we'll stop there. And then we hear the following. With the trillions spent on exotic weapons for future wars during the Cold War, lo and behold, the Soviet Union and the US CIA had been discussing plans to peddle their top secret weather technologies to the world. Owning the Weather 2025 is a white paper that states, in 2025, US aerospace forces can own the weather by capitalizing on emerging technologies and focusing development of those technologies towards fighting applications. Such a capability offers the warfighters tools to shape the battle space in ways never before possible. In the U.S., weather modification will likely become a part of national security policy with both domestic and international applications. Wired magazine in January 2000 detailed the military's plan for made-to-order thunderstorms and lightning strikes on demand. Hello? Help? Want to share some of that with the planet? And Mighty Mouse now has moved off the TV screen and into the new reality. Scientists down the coast in La Jolla have created the master mouse by altering just one gene. The newly created mouse is healthy, stronger, can run up to an hour longer than normal mice, and does not gain weight, even in the absence of exercise. The news is being received by the Olympic athletes and officials in Greece at a difficult time as numerous master athletes are dropping out of the Olympics due to the use of banned drugs. That'll be drugs that do exactly what this gene therapy does. Hello? Help? I'm not sure humans are genetically capable of comprehending what this actually means. And that's the news. And here's a few reminders. Remember to take down our toll-free number to talk with Dr. Ehrlich in our third segment. That's 888-327-0061. Next week, we celebrate Wilderness at 40 with some amazing guests, legendary voices from the wilderness. And coming up soon, the majestic celebration of beauty and wonder by nature photographer Tom Mangelson. Now, I happen to be able to tell where all my listeners are, and I'm so thrilled to know that the Wild Side News is reaching around the world via the Internet. So I want to extend a very special welcome to my international friends of the Earth from Brazil, Poland, Australia, Japan, Taiwan, Norway, France, Canada, Finland, Singapore, Togo, Turkey, Germany, Italy, Netherlands, Spain, Switzerland, Estonia, Mexico, and Peru. Thank all of you for listening. And tell your friends and family. And I encourage all of you as well to check out the Worldwide Panorama exhibition that I have a link to on the website from our friends at Mountain Vision. It's an extraordinary opportunity to take a virtual tour around the world on the Wild Side News and on the Internet. Well, you know, today I'm joined by... Hello. Today, our Park of the Week is truly a monument to some of the best that American democracy has produced. And today I'm joined by another great national park friend, Deputy Superintendent of the George Washington Memorial Parkway, J.J. James. James, J.J., welcome to the Wildside News.
Thanks, Sydney.
You know, your park is, some parks are rural, some parks are really out in the middle of nowhere. Yours is a cosmopolitan international park. Why don't you tell us about the George Washington Memorial Parkway?
Well, George Washington Memorial Parkway is really quite an interesting park in the national park system. It's actually the parkway itself, which is about 32 miles long. It runs mainly in Virginia along the Potomac River, and it starts at Mount Vernon and actually goes all the way up to Great Falls of the Potomac, and it goes over into the Maryland side as well, with the sites of Clara Barton House and the Glen Echo Park, which is actually a turn of the century Chautauqua and amusement park that's been converted into a park area.
Now, actually, the 30-mile journey includes a lot of memorials that people assume are just part of America.
Yeah.
Why don't you talk about some of those memorials as well that actually you administer?
We actually manage and take care of Arlington House, which is the ancestral home of the Custis Lee family. For those listeners, that's the individual. It's the home of Robert E. Lee and Martha Custis. And we also take care of the U.S. Marine Corps Memorial, otherwise known as the Iwo Jima Memorial. We have a number of other smaller park areas that probably aren't as well known. We have the LBJ, the Lyndon B. Johnson Memorial Grove. We have the Sailors and Seamen Memorial. All of these are along the Potomac River. Some areas we have Fort Hunt Park. Really, the range of cultural, natural, and recreational areas that we have within that 32-mile stretch is pretty astounding when people start looking at it.
I would guess it's a rather unique visitorship that you see through your park every day.
We get about 7 million people a year from all over the world. Of course, the parkway serves as a major access to the nation's capital, and as a result of that, we do get people from all over, because Washington, D.C. is such a cosmopolitan city.
It is indeed. Now, in most national parks, of course, there's a fee to enter. You have kind of a different sort of approach to this thing, because many of these monuments and places are actually free and open. For example, talk to me about the Robert E. Lee Memorial. That does sound interesting.
The Arlington House is actually a memorial to Robert E. Lee. That's what it was designated by Congress and how we're taking care of it. So the house has been restored to the period of when Lee lived there with his wife, Martha, and it's a antebellum period house, pre-Civil War, and the focus there is to talk not only about the family connection between the Lees and the Custises, and actually Washington, George Washington, who was married into the Custis family as well. But also it's to talk about what kind of plantation life existed there at that time. And also another aspect that we're exploring more recently is the slavery that took place there, because we have done some restoration work on some of the slave quarters areas that are on the grounds as well.
That's a great place to visit, and people have an opportunity to see really some of the historic remnants of our tradition. I know that you like to refer to the George Washington Memorial Parkway as the Parkway Road to Adventure. You certainly are covered in terms of the cultural arenas, but you as well have quite an interesting opportunity for people to explore sort of natural areas. Let's talk about, for example, how about your island that makes up your park?
Oh, yes. Theodore Roosevelt Island. It's one of those few islands in the Potomac that is a nature sanctuary. It was set aside again by Congress and managed by the Park Service to serve as a natural preserve or sanctuary for the wildlife and the birds and the vegetation that existed during the period of time when Washington was a less developed area. So it's a nice little island in the urban nature of the area, I guess.
Now, how do people actually get to Teddy Roosevelt Island?
You cross a bridge. There's actually a causeway-type bridge, a pedestrian bridge that people cross on to get over to the island.
Oh, yeah.
And there are a number of hiking trails that go throughout the island. The island is roughly about 2 to 3 miles long, and there's all kinds of different natural environments there, everything from a marshland to riparian areas there's even an area, a plaza area, that has been set aside with a large statue of Theodore Roosevelt, since the island was set aside in his name as a conservation area in tribute to his title as the great conservationist.
I understand as well that you have at least 18 miles of trails that people can walk, bike, hike, and adventure on.
Actually, more than that. We have trails. One of the trails is the Mount Vernon Trail that runs the entire length of the parkway on the Virginia side, and it connects with another trail, the Potomac Heritage Trail, which runs all the way into Pennsylvania for roughly a length of about 180 miles.
JJ, tell us quickly how people can find your website.
They can find it at nps.gov/EWMP.
On return, Paul Ehrlich.